This is the Bates Bobcast, our weekly podcast about the week that was in Bates Athletics. My name is Aaron Morse, and this week we are previewing this weekend's main state championship being held at Russell Street Track and Field. Plus, the lacrosse teams both picked up key wins over Connecticut College, and a novice coxswain got off to a strong start for women's rowing. That's coming up on the Bates Bobcast. The men's lacrosse team is 9-4 overall, 5-4 in NESCAC, and 9th in the most recent NPI rankings after they defeated Connecticut College 19-11 on Senior Day Saturday at Garcelon Field. Sophomore Jack Goldbach scored a career-high 5 goals in the victory, and he is our male Bobcat of the week. Male Bobcat of the week, Jack Goldbach with us here on the Bobcast talking some men's lacrosse. And Jack, first of all, you're a sophomore here at Bates. You've already matched your point total from a year ago. The team is having a lot of success. Tell me a little bit about what this season has been like from your perspective, your second year. Obviously, the team saw progress last season from previous years, and this year it seems like you guys have taken a next step.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it just comes with, you know, the recruiting. Coach Anita's done a great job recruiting. We got a lot of other New Jersey guys coming in, which has been awesome. Henry McCann, Charlie Lowe, Charlie Hepp, give all those guys a shout out. But I think that, you know, it just correlates to the amount of depth that we have as a team. You know, when you look at the stats, if you cover one guy, you know, the other 5 guys are going to be open, which is awesome. We're all within that 20 to 30 point range. And what's awesome about that is it's so hard to scout. So, you know, Connor's usually getting the pole every time. Connor's our guy. And that just opens up the gateway for the other 5 guys, which is awesome because, you know, sometimes you're not going to have a great game, but with that being said, you know that the other 5 guys are going to pick up your slack. So I just think it comes down to the depth that we have and the success that we're seeing is because, you know, everyone's contributing. So
you mentioned New Jersey. We actually had Henry McCann on recently New Jersey. What's this group like? How big is lacrosse in New Jersey right now?
Yeah, so I think just lacrosse as a sport in general is just continuing to grow everywhere. You know, it's usually huge in the Long Island area, but New Jersey is definitely putting itself on the map. You know, we have a lot of club teams, Patriot, BBL, Leading Edge, all those teams are really, you know, coming into their own. And I think it's just continuing to grow and become a bigger sport.
Did you, like, play against Henry or with Henry in high school?
So I did, yeah. So Henry went to a school called MKA, which is a private school. And then I went to a public school at James Caldwell High School. So they were actually in our conference. And I would usually see him, obviously, when I was a senior, he'd be a junior. We didn't play them every year, but I think I played him 2 or 3 times. And I got the best of him on those games, but it was just great seeing him and just developing him, you know, coming into college, and it was great building our friendship. So
great. Tell me, growing up, how did you first get involved with the sport? What made you interested in playing?
Yeah, definitely. So I think, you know, my dad's brought me into a lot of sports. My dad wrestled at Rutgers. So I grew up being a wrestler. I grew up playing lacrosse. I ran cross country my entire life. So, you know, always doing something, trying something out, you know, even playing soccer when I was really young and just kind of figuring out what I was really passionate about. And it started in first grade, really. My dad used to coach the middle school team. So those were usually the 5th, 6th graders. And I was in first grade at the time. So I'd be messing around with them. And it was a great experience, you know, getting practice with the older guys, constantly having a stick in my hand. And one thing that my dad always like preached was, you know, being able to play with both hands, lefty and righty, because growing up, I was always on the smaller side. So, you know, I wasn't going to be able to use my body and like my maturity as a physical. So, you know, trying to be two-handed is what I've been working on my entire life. And, you know, just my dad's been preaching that to me ever since I was a kid. Always had a stick in my hand, but that's really where my passion came from.
You mentioned running cross country. I don't feel like there's a ton of overlap sometimes between cross country runners and men's lacrosse players. Did you know anyone else who did that combination like you did?
No. So what's really funny actually is my head coach for lacrosse in high school was also the head coach for the cross country team. So that was kind of the overlap there. And I figured, hey, you know, might as well run as well. It'll get me in great shape, and it's been paying dividends for lacrosse.
So. I was going to say, do you find yourself having lots of endurance because of your background?
Absolutely. It's definitely helped, especially in the conditioning tests early on in the season and just staying on the field, you know, because it's a little different. Cross country is obviously a long distance, but with lacrosse, it's more faster spurts. But with that being said, it's definitely helped me out in terms of the endurance game.
What's the team culture like? Because I feel like it's very different in those sports you mentioned, cross country, wrestling, lacrosse, a variety of team cultures. That must be interesting, right?
It is. It definitely. Yeah. I think it's one of those things, too, where, you know, it could really be for any sport, but it just, you know, you're going through the pain and everyone on your team is going through the same thing. So it kind of builds up that respect. Cross country is a team sport, but it's also, you know, there's an individual aspect to it in terms of, you know, your top guys are usually going to place faster, you know, the lower times. And then those other guys are, you know, doing their best to give their best effort, put their best effort forward and just pick up the slack on any other field. So, you know, with that being said, it kind of just builds that trust. So I guess that's the connection between lacrosse and cross country in that, you know, you're going to do what you can to provide the best output for the team, but you're also putting trust in your other guys that they're going to put their best foot forward and, you know, contribute to the overall output of the team.
When you were looking around for colleges, what made Bates the place for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it just comes down to, you know, NESCAC schools are just great academic schools. And that was kind of my whole priority going into the recruiting process coming from high school. You know, I never really knew where I wanted to go to college, but I kind of had this idea that, you know, I'd want to leverage lacrosse and anything to get into a better academic school that I could. So, you know, after seeing a couple of these NESCAC schools and hopping on the phone with a couple of them, just, you know, stuck out to me. You know, he seemed like he really wanted me. And it just, like, the culture at the school after coming up to visit just seemed unmatchable. And, you know, with that being said, landed here and just have had absolutely no regrets.
Yeah, certainly. And then, you know, being a sophomore, what were some lessons you learned your first year of college lacrosse you've applied to this season, perhaps?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's just the pace of the game is a lot faster. You know, again, a lot of my buddies went to boarding school or private school, so a lot of those teams are really advanced growing up, you know, at the high school level. And I'd still say I would still say that the public school I went to, we played a lot of competitive ball, you know, but with that being said, at the college level, the pace is definitely a lot faster. So I think that, you know, being able to analyze film and analyze the pace at which I played my freshman year compared to my senior year in high school, I was able to kind of get comfortable with that ability and take that into, you know, my training over the summer coming into my sophomore year and just everything, even training my mind just to, you know, be able to, okay, I'm going to make a mistake here and there, but don't let it get to me. You know, I'm going to continue putting my best foot forward and doing what I can for the team.
5 goals there against Connecticut College. What was opening up for you? That's a season high there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that, you know, I give a credit to all my teammates. I don't think I can't do any of that without them. And it comes down to spacing. You know, everyone's in the right spaces. It gives me the availability to, you know, get those opportunities. And I just credit all my teammates, again, having so much depth. We all know where we're on the field. We're starting to build that chemistry, which is awesome because, you know, right now during the season, we're starting to peak. You see Hamilton putting up 17 goals, Khan putting up 19 goals. You know, I can confidently say that we got one of the best teams, one of the best offenses, one of the best defenses in the country. And what's something that Anino preaches is that, yes, these regular season games are extremely important, but we should more so look at them as, you know, preparation for lacrosse in May, because that's when it really matters. So, you know, we're taking every game seriously. You know, the only thing we got in mind right now is Colby. But with that being said, this is all preparation and getting ready for what's to come in May.
Yeah, Colby, we're talking on Tuesday. That's tomorrow night, rivalry matchup. What are your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, I think we're locked in. We had a great practice yesterday. Going to finish up one last practice today. You know, we're going to start working on some scout. Went over some film as a unit last night. And, again, it comes down to trust. You know, everyone watches individual film by themselves. You know, we trust that my teammates are doing the same. And I think that, you know, we're ready. We have the confidence that we're going to go in and we're going to take it to them. You know, no NESCAC game's a pushover. So, you know, you look at the record and sometimes our coach preaches to us that, you know, you can't just look at the record and make judgments, but go into this game as if, you know, they're anyone. So we're going to go into it as if they were a Tufts, and we're going to go into it and just give it to them.
I was going to say that because, like, you've had, you know, a tough back half of the schedule with with Bowdoin and Tufts. Those were close games. Like, you guys were right in it. I mean, do you feel like the team is, you know, you've taken another step this year? There's obviously still more room to grow, but it seems like it's definitely continuing to inch forward, like, in the right direction, right? What do those games kind of teach you about, you know, the development of this program, you know, hanging with two teams who are currently, I think, last check, undefeated?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it just comes down to, again, just confidence, you know. Another thing Anino preaches to us is just keeping 100% effort, 100% focus, and 0% outcome. So, you know, he preaches a lot about mentality and how, you know, it doesn't matter who's in front of us. You know, we're able to beat anybody, and you can see that by how close our Tufts and Bowdoin game was. You know, we can step on the field, and we're confident enough that we're going to be able to hang with anyone in the country. And I just think that comes down to, again, just being able to trust each other, having focus and practice, giving 100% effort, and not worrying about the outcome at the end of the day. You know, with that being said, there's going to be mistakes. No game's going to be perfect. So, you know, just finding those ways to reset your mental, even if that's after a negative play, even if that's after a positive play, and just focusing on the next play. So just continuing to stay positive, continuing to stay whole as a group, and just move forward.
Have you always been on the attack throughout your career?
So, yeah, throughout high school, always played attack. Yeah. Throughout college, always played attack. I actually played midi for 2 games this year to switch up some schemes, which was great, you know. Coach Chalet area has been doing a great job, you know, messing around with our offense, incorporating different plays, and just finding ways to, you know, make it difficult for these defenses, try to expose what they do, and just get different matchups. So I've been bouncing around a little bit, but what we've been doing has been awesome.
The strategy part of it is interesting to me. Like, do you enjoy that kind of like figuring out like what matchups might work against certain teams and stuff?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think a huge part of the game is just transition as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, transferring over to MIDI for two games, I got to see what it was like to clear the ball and also ride as a midfielder, which just continues to build up and develop your IQ as an attacker. Because now I know, you know, being down at the attacks, I can already see what the midfielders are going to be doing, kind of judge where they're going to be on the field. And that just, again, just grows your mental, grows your mind, and is able to better, you know, produce the output on the field.
You know, early on in the season, the team got a huge win at Wesley, and that was like a big one, because I feel like last year you guys basically beat everyone who you kind of should have beat, couldn't quite beat the ranked teams. This year, Wesley was ranked sixth. They're still ranked really high today. So that win seems to be looming large. What are your recollections of that victory and what it meant for the program?
No, definitely. Yeah. I think it just comes from being hungry. I know that we saw them twice last year, regular mm-hmm. season. We now I don't remember the score, but I know it was pretty close during the regular season. We played them tough on Garcelon. And then later that year, we played them in the NESCAC playoffs first round, and we went down to their house, and they put a little bit of a beatdown on us. So, you know, we kind of took that personal. We had them pinned on our map for this year, and I think it just comes from being hungry and wanting to get back at them. And, you know, that was the main goal as a team and as a unit, and we progressed on the field, and we put the product out that, you know, was good enough to beat them. So,
you know, the team, obviously, the men's lacrosse, big roster. What's it like getting to know all these guys? You know, it's, what, almost 50 people, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the biggest things is, you know, being a part of this team is just the culture. And I credit the seniors to doing that. And, you know, one of our teammates, Ben Codner, who's a junior, yep. He brought this out in the huddle the other day that, you know, we got kids coming up to us after the game on Garce, Lewiston locals, just, you know, kids from high school, middle school, asking us to sign autographs, asking us to sign balls. And, you know, it seems like such a simple gesture, but it really is awesome. And that's kind of the thing that, you know, that's the culture that these seniors have built for this program. And I think it just comes down to, again, like meeting all one of these 50 guys is just been a pleasure. They're all good dudes. And, you know, they all have that same mindset of just wanting to win and wanting to, you know, put their best foot forward and progress as a unit.
Yeah, what did it mean to send them off with a win on senior day? I mean, obviously, hopefully we'll have another home game possibly postseason, but I also like to have that win for them, kind of, right?
No, definitely. It's been awesome. And I went up to Connor and a couple of them and just said how proud I am of them, because, you know, it means so much to me. It means so much to them. And I know that, you know, the seniors have been through it all. They've been through it when this program is struggling a little bit, and they've been through it when they've seen a lot of success. So, you know, being able to, you know, succeed as a unit has just been such a great accomplishment, and I'm so excited that these seniors were able to see that. So
excellent. Any other thoughts you wanted to share on the season we haven't got to talk about? Anything else you wanted to mention?
I just think that, you know, continue watching. We're gonna continue putting what we can out on that field, and we're gonna make a run. So I'm proud of the guys. I'm confident in what we're gonna be able to do, and I'm excited to what the rest of the season's got for us.
Jack Goldbach, our male Bobcat of the week, he's got 36 points on the season. He had a career high 5 goals in the senior day win over Connecticut College. Very strong performance there against Tufts on last Wednesday as well. Bates is at Colby Wednesday night, 7:00 up there in Waterville, and then that will kind of figure out where they are in the postseason after that. But things are looking great, especially nationally, ranked number 9 by the NPI right now. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Aaron.
The women's lacrosse team is 7-7 overall and picked up their third NESCAC win of the season on Saturday when they prevailed 14-9 at Connecticut College. Senior Caroline Keating followed up her season-high 4 goals at Tufts earlier in the week with 3 goals, 1 assist, and a career-high 11 draw controls against the Camels. And Caroline Keating is our female Bobcat of the week. Well, Caroline, obviously a big win there against Connecticut College on the road on Saturday. Tell me a little bit about what kind of came together for the Bobcats to get that 14-9 win. What were your major takeaways from that game?
It's kind of been accumulation throughout the whole season. We've been having a great season, and then we were coming off of a few wins from Hamilton, Bowdoin, a few big wins for us, and then coming into Conn, we just had a lot of really good positive momentum. We've really been focusing on playing section by section, like focusing on 5 minutes at a time, 2 minutes at a time, even like just kind of focusing on what's in front of us. And I think that really connected for us at Conn, as it has been in the past few games, and just playing our game and playing together as a team.
11 draw controls for you in that game. What was clicking there?
Well, I'm just on the circle for most of those, getting the draw controls. It's really all about the person that's taking the draw. And for us in Conn, that was Haley Wines, who's a great, great draw taker and great player. And she is just really good at placing the ball. And I was just able to communicate with her, and she was awesome at communicating to me about where I should be and where to go for those draw controls. So, yeah, worked out well.
Interesting, because you've taken the draw yourself quite a few times during your time at Bates.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the key to that success, not only when you're taking the draw, but also when you're on the circle? I mean, how do you kind of adjust things? What are your goals there, kind of?
We have we like to call Draw World. It's kind of a group of people that we all kind of work on the draw circle, but that it kind of just depends on the personnel in the game. For this one specifically, it's all about kind of who can get the dig and the draw the fastest. And Haley is really great at reaction time, so she, for just against who we were playing in con, it worked out really well. And for other games, I'm someone who likes to push on the draw. So if we're playing against someone who that works well against, I'll take the draw sometimes, but it kind of just depends. And yeah, it ended up working out really well. And she likes to pull. So the kind of the opposite, and just, yeah, placed it really well.
So you're a senior now. Mm-hmm. Time flies. Yeah. from Rye, New York. Take us back though. Growing up, when do you start playing lacrosse? How did this become, you know, your sport?
Yeah, I started playing when I was really young, probably like kindergarten or before that. My whole family plays lacrosse, basically. My dad played in college, so he kind of brought it in for us. My older brother played in college, and my younger sister is playing next year in college, and then my other sister also plays, but not in college next year. And yeah, so kind of just has been a family thing for me. I've always loved it growing up, and played in high school club and all of that, and just really wanted to continue in college.
Yeah, so when you were looking at colleges, what made Bates the place for you coming from New York?
Yeah, the NESCACs obviously were a big part of my recruiting journey. I was really interested in kind of the balance of the academics and the lacrosse aspect. And Bates, the community here, I know everyone says it, but I really do think it's really special. And I immediately just loved the team, loved everything that Bates had to offer.
Great. And then, I mean, as a senior now, what have you kind of learned over your time as a Bobcat about, you know, kind of what it takes to succeed at the college level, you know, in lacrosse compared to, you know, high school and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've definitely learned a lot. It's been different over all 4 years that I've been here. And I think it's really about kind of the team dynamics coming together with your team. And it's hard in a college aspect. All 4 years are different. You kind of have new people, new leadership. And I think just establishing those values as a team and having the same core values through all 4 years, working together and really kind of just playing off of each other and like coming together as a family has been something that I've learned that is the most important.
Tell me a little bit about Coach P, because she came in last year kind of like almost right as the season started. So
she
came in like, quickly, if you will, in terms of like having to adjust to a whole new team and you having to adjust to a coach. What's it been like learning from her, and what have you seen from her in year two here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been awesome. I know Lauren was here talking about it a little bit last week, but literally just echoing what Lauren was saying. She's been a great coach, and we've learned so much. I think she's really turned the program around in instilling that intensity and that drive to want to be a ranked team and want to be able to beat all the teams in the NESCAC and be a top player in the NESCAC. And I think that she really brings that balance with truly caring about us as players and instilling that family aspect and community, but also learning how to push each other and push ourselves. Yeah, and especially for our senior class, I think she's really showed us a lot of how to, like, rally the whole team and bring everyone in and really instill that in our team.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought the senior class because, you know, you had senior day against Hamilton back on April 4th. What was that kind of like, to not only to have senior day, but also to get a win on senior day, right?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, I think our class is just so special. We have a big class, 11 of us, and it's been all of us for all those 4 years, which is, I think, really special since oftentimes you hear things about different classes. It doesn't stay the same for all 4 years, and that's really brought us together. And I think just being able to have that come together on senior day and have all of our families there, all of our friends there, seeing everyone, it was really special.
And you've got a game, we're talking on a Tuesday, tomorrow night, right here, Garcelon Field, 7 o'clock, against a ranked Colby team. They're 12th in the country, but you know, maybe they're not as strong as perhaps the preseason rankings were. So interesting matchup here. What are your thoughts on your probably your final home game, right?
Yeah. Probably our final home game. Not our final game, I don't think. Well, I don't want to jinx anything.
In good position. Yeah.
But no, I'm really excited for this game. I think it'll be a really good matchup. I mean, Colby's had a pretty similar season to us. I think they just beat Bowdoin only by one. Mm. So, like, very similar schedule matchups and all of that. But I'm really excited. I think it'll just be a great way to kind of finalize our regular season and hopefully end up with a win at home for our last home game.
What's it like playing under the lights at Garcelon?
It's awesome. I mean, Garcelon is just such a cool experience. Like having the fans right behind you, being kind of at the center of campus. I feel like even compared to other NESCAC schools, it's a different vibe on that field because it's just really in the center of the campus and a very cool experience. And yeah, great, great way to end our home season, home career.
Throughout your career, I'm just looking at the stats, you've kind of like basically do, I say, a little bit of everything, right? You score goals, you dish out assists, you get ground balls, you cause turnovers, you get a lot of draw controls. Has that always been like kind of your game, like even back when you were a kid, like doing a little bit of everything in the midfield sort of?
Kind of. Yeah. I think growing up, definitely. I always played midfield growing up. And then as I played club on a more competitive team, I actually only played defense for a while on my club team. But my high school was a little bit not as an intense team. So it was kind of, I played all over the place for high school, and that kind of really shaped, I think, the player that I am now. And yeah, it's funny thinking about now how attack is such a big part of my play. And I only played defense for a while, but yeah, I love playing midfield and being able to be everywhere. I feel like it gives me like a full view of the field and full.
Yeah. And you mentioned Lauren, obviously, you know, a fellow senior, and both of you, I think recently, you know, reached some milestones. Well, you have over 200 draw controls, over 100 ground balls, 90 points. Lauren, I think, just got over 100 points, right?
Yeah.
So what's it like been working with her for 4 years?
It's awesome. I mean, Lauren's one of my best friends, and just to be with her for all of our accomplishments and through all 4 years, it's been so special. And now to see it kind of all accumulate in our senior year and just to see the trajectory that we've been on, both I think each of us individually, but also as a team, I think we've grown so much over the 4 years. And it's so awesome to see that and just to see the way that we lead now and like leadership from us and from the senior class and in total, to see that come together is really special.
You know, as a senior, can you tell me a little bit about, you know, maybe the campus atmosphere in terms of like, you know, Bobcats supporting Bobcats, if you will, right? Like, you know, fellow student athletes coming to your games, you going to other games. What's that been like over 4 years, you know, not only supporting other teams, but having them support you?
Yeah, it's been awesome. I think that's one of our favorite things as a team, as a grade, everything, just supporting each other and supporting other teams. The women's basketball team, I'll shout them out. They're some of our best friends in the senior class. And so we love to support them and they're awesome and show up to our games. It's just, yeah, even men's lacrosse games, everyone loves to support them. And it's just such a community, as especially what kind of drew me to Bates originally. And I think I've really seen that in the 4 years, especially this year.
I meant to ask you, the Hamilton game, we touched on it earlier, but I wanted to circle back because that game, you had the free position.
Yeah.
There was no one in the goal, right? Have you ever had that opportunity before?
No, I've never had that opportunity specifically. I didn't really think that would happen. It was kind of spur of the moment, obviously. The goalie caused the foul, and they needed someone to take the free position. Sarah, who had the shot, got hurt, so she went off. So I came on and took the free position for her, and it was just an interesting shot. I wasn't there was a lot going on back and forth between the refs. I wasn't sure if there was going to be a goalie or not, so I was nervous. Like this is a shot you kind of have to make. So it definitely took a lot of pressure off not having a goalie in the net, but
yeah, it's like a free throw in basketball or something, right?
Yeah.
Like you feel pressure because it's wide open, but you better not miss.
Yeah. The amount of people that came up to me after saying, "Were you nervous taking that shot, even though it was a open net?" Yeah, definitely. It was still nerve-wracking a little bit.
Yeah. And you are a psychology major. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about. I mean, you're a senior, so I want to ask about your post Bates plans here.
Yeah. I'm going to be living. Well, I'm from New York, so I'll probably be living at home for a little bit, but I have a job in New York City working, doing communications, kind of like strategic communications and PR stuff, which I'm really interested in. I interned at this place, FGS, it's called FGS Global. I interned there last summer. I really enjoyed it, and luckily we'll be going back and, yeah, continuing that.
Nice. They do what? You said PR for?
Yeah, it's communications. They do kind of a lot of different areas, but strategic communications and crisis communications.
So you have a job lined up, you said?
Yes.
Oh, nice. That's got to be a good feeling.
Yeah. It is a good feeling. It is nice. I also don't start until September, so
A
nice, I can have the summer to kind of relax and regroup.
Part of my geography ignorance is Rye near New York City?
Yes. It's about like a 40-minute commute into the city. So by train, it's super easy.
Gotcha. Nice. Okay. And then we have a number of student-athletes from Rye, New York. I find that interesting. I think Jack Margolef on the baseball team. Do the people from Rye, is there a pipeline here? How does that happen? Coincidence?
I think, honestly, coincidence. Yeah. I mean, I feel like besides our grade, I mean, Jack and then Aiden on the men's lacrosse team. I think there's also a men's basketball player. So A few, but I don't think that there's any specific pipeline. It kind of just happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, and interesting that it's all with athletes, but yeah, yeah, hopefully it continues.
Yeah, Ride New York just keeps popping up on the hometowns.
It seems like.
Well, any other thoughts you wanted to share on this past weekend and, you know, this upcoming game against Colby we haven't got to talk about yet?
Not really specifically. I'm just super excited for Colby. I think it'll be a great game, a very close matchup, and I'm really excited to see how it plays out.
Sounds good. Caroline Keating is our female Bobcat of the week. She had 11 draw controls at Connecticut College and had 3 goals as well, 4 goals against a very good Tufts team earlier in the week. And again, home against Colby tomorrow, if you're listening here on Tuesday, Wednesday night, 7 o'clock at Garth Salon Field. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
The rowing teams had a successful weekend on the Malden River and Lake Quinsigamond. There were a number of highlights, including the men's team sweeping their races on Sunday. But this week, we chatted with novice women's coxswain Riley Tran, who led the varsity 4 to victory in all 3 of their races. Well, Riley, you are a novice coxswain. This past weekend was your first ever regatta. But so tell me a little bit about, first of all, what appealed to you to come to Bates from Colorado? And when did you decide you wanted to join our rowing program?
I went to Bates because I had an uncle who had gone to Bates and my cousin, who was also rowing. He's important for later. He goes to Bates. And I applied, and then I toured, and I was like, you know, it's not too bad. I'll stick with this. So I stuck with Bates from Colorado. And then for rowing, because my cousin was on rowing, I, like, met up with him to get lunch because I just wanted to, like, talk to him. He's like, how are you settling in? And I was like, you know, like, I'm kind of, like, bored. He's like, you know, why don't you join rowing? And I was like, you're kind of biased. He's like, no, you should try it. There was, like, a meeting tonight. And I was like, okay. So I went to the meeting, and then they kind of got me situated. They're like, okay, you're on the team. I was like, wow, okay. And I stuck with it since.
And you're a coxswain, which is a specific role that requires a lot of leadership and knowledge, honestly. So how have you been learning that role?
It's a lot. It's so much. Because I'm learning an entirely new sport.
Yeah.
And I'm in this leadership position. So I'm not only learning the sport itself, but I'm also learning how to be a coxswain all at the same time. And it's a lot. It's a lot to learn. So it was a lot of me talking to people. I talked to my teammates. I've been given basically homework, and I'm like, go research this. And I go and watch videos about it, and I'm like, okay, now I'm learning more. And it's like me talking to other coxswains on different teams. They're like, oh, here's some advice. And it's just, I'm just gathering so much information just so I can be a coxswain.
And the team finally got to go on the Androscoggin River a week ago, maybe?
A week ago.
So what was the first moment like going into the boat, your first time as a coxswain, like during practice even?
For practice, I had been in the boat previously. Like I was in the boat twice in the fall.
Right.
Yeah, that was a lot. That was really stressful because the boat was like tipping and I was like, this is a lot. And then the second time I was in the boat, it was after a bunch of rain had fallen. So the river was flooded and there was a bunch of debris. And I was like, I don't know how to steer past all this debris. And I brushed past some debris. But that was a lot. It was very overwhelming, and it was a lot to try and manage not only steering, but also running the practice, talking to them and keeping time. That was a lot.
I was going to say also as a coxswain, when you're coxswaining a 4, that is obviously different than coxswaining an 8. You're in a different spot in the boat and everything. Have you coxswained any 8s or have you just been focused on 4s?
I've coxswained the 8s before.
Yeah.
I've done both.
So what's the similarities, differences for you? Is there a big difference? I mean,
the big difference is that in the 4, I can't see them, and that's what makes it hard because I don't really know. I don't have enough, like, feeling in the boat to know exactly what they're doing yet because I don't have a lot of experience. So in an 8, it's a lot easier for me to see something and say something. But also in an 8, it's also harder for me to steer because I'm so far in the back of the boat that I can't see right in front of me.
Did you go to Heather Charles in the fall or no?
I did not.
No, okay. So this past weekend was your very first
regatta. This is my very regatta. First regatta.
Because the first weekend, you were supposed to cox the 4 and the race got canceled,
correct,
right?
Yes.
So was that a little frustrating?
That was really sad. Yeah, but I was like, I was really sad and like, I was like, oh, it's just some bad weather. And then I started seeing the 8s come in. They were flooded. Mm. I was like, oh, I definitely would have sunk because I'm in a smaller boat. So maybe it's good that I didn't actually go out.
So your first regatta, what was it like going to the starting line? I mean, take us through that moment sort of.
It was a lot of me like making preparations. And then we were racing very late. So there was a lot of just like waiting around and like watching the others go. And then when it came time for like my race plan, like pre-race plan, we were like, okay, like we're starting the warm-up. And they would go warm up. And then I was like, okay, we're going to like take our last bathroom break. Okay, now we're going to get hands on the boat so we can take it down. And then right then when I was like, okay, let's get hands on, My coach was like, so we've decided not to take you. And I was like, okay, cool. We were almost getting ready to get on the water.
Oh, for the first weekend.
For the first weekend.
Oh, you were about ready to race. And then they were like, we're canceling this.
Yeah.
Okay. But then so this weekend.
This weekend it was different. This weekend it was everything went to plan.
Yes.
They warmed up. We had our last bathroom break. And then we got hands on. And then we put the boat in the water. And then we went up to the course to practice. And then they called us to the start line. And then we started and we raced.
You had a heat and a final, is that right? Or did just a final for you?
Yeah, on Saturday it was a heat and then a final.
Okay, so and you won both.
Yeah, I won both.
So was it, that must be a pretty cool moment to see.
It was a lot of fun.
At what point in each of those races were you realize, oh, we're gonna win this thing?
For me, it was really hard because I'm in a four, right. So I can't see behind me, so yeah. I had no idea where they were, and I was like, they could be anywhere. I'm just gonna assume they're right next to us. But then we passed the line, and then I looked behind me, and they were nowhere in sight. And I was like, oh, we were actually really far ahead.
Are the other people in the four also novices?
No. No, they're not.
They have experience. Okay. So what's it like working with them, sort of?
It's a lot of – they're very helpful. A lot of them are very – one of them in particular, her name is Taylor Glick. She also used to cox, so she's been helping me a lot.
Okay.
So she's, like, rowing, and then she'll also, like, sometimes give me feedback. And I'm like, this is really helpful. So a lot of times I'll ask them for feedback, and then they'll tell me, like, oh, you should do this next time. And that's really helpful.
Did you play sports growing up, anything?
I did, yeah. Yep. I swam for most of my life. I swam 16 years before I came to Bates.
Okay. So the water has always been appealing, I suppose, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the culture of walk-ons with the rowing program, I mean, there's others who, like you, have never been – what's that like? Kind of like, you know, were you feeling accepted right away, sort of?
It was very, like, welcoming. I think – my experience had been different compared to other walk-ons because I'm the only walk-on coxswain right now.
Okay.
So it was a lot to – it was kind of lonely because I was like, oh, like, they can't really – the rowers can't help me because, like, that's, like, a coxswain thing.
Yeah.
And then, like, the coxswains were, like, very busy doing their own thing, so I wasn't getting a lot of, like, guidance. Mm. And that was very hard for me because it's a lot easier, I think, as a walk-on rower to, like, connect with other rowers because they're like, oh, like, we know what you're doing. And also they're probably going to be in the boat with you and they'll be behind you or in front of you and, like, help you. But for the coxswain, you're at the very end of the boat and there's no other coxswain in the boat to help you. So you have to, like, fend for yourself.
You mentioned YouTube videos.
Yeah.
So what did you learn from the YouTube videos you watched?
I learned, well, a lot of it wasn't particularly helpful until I got into a boat because it was a lot of it was like, oh, like, if you're noticing based on your boat feel, and I was like, I don't really have that yet. Or it's like, oh, like, your race plan. I'm like, I've never raced yet. That's not really helpful. But a lot of it was very informative in regards to, like, knowing to steer, knowing, like, oh, like, if you ever see this, like, this is what you should say. And also just, like, I learned how to load into a stake boat. I wasn't successful at the race doing that, but I did learn how to do it through a YouTube video.
Excellent. So, what's kind of the next thing you're trying to, you know, kind of learn as you go along here?
Definitely more technique-based things, like in calling out technique for different rowers. I think that would be very helpful for everyone.
And do the fours work with one of our coaches? How does that kind of go?
Yeah, sometimes there will be, like, a coach that will be alongside me and, like, will, like, talk to my rowers and sometimes talk to me, and that's helpful. But I know that there will eventually be some times where it's like, here's the workout, go, and I'll be on my own. Mm. So
is that exciting? Is that nerve-wracking?
It's actually pretty exciting. I'm actually excited for that.
What's it like going out there on the Androscoggin River? I know you've only been out there a few times, but
cold.
Yeah.
Cold for the most part. Sometimes icy. Sometimes I freeze to my seat. But that's about it, yeah.
It's a big team. I mean, the rowing team, lots of rowers. I mean, I know the men's side has, like, 5 8s right now, and the women have a fair number of 8s and 4, obviously. What's this group like? I mean, how do you get to know people in such a big roster the first year?
It's so much. It's actually a lot. It took me a really long time to learn everybody's name. And it was also really bad because I have to learn everyone's name because coxswains do attendance. So it was hard to, like, put a face to a name and do it for all the women's rowers. But it's okay. I figured it out. It was really hard, but I got it.
You mentioned race plan. Were there race plans this weekend for the 40s? Kind of go out there.
Okay.
Yeah. What's the race plan?
I asked a coxswain for her race plan, and then I basically just copied that.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
And so she, like, gave me, like, oh, she's like, this is what I do. And I was like, okay, great. So I just copied and pasted it, and then I just sent it to my rowers. But I altered the time because we had different timings.
Right. Right.
So here is the race plan. And it's very simple, but it was like, okay, like, we meet at the boat, like, an hour and a half-ish before the race. And then we have a meeting and we discuss. And then we meet and then they warm up on their own. They have 30 minutes to warm up on their own. And then after that, we have the last call for a bathroom break. And then 5 minutes after that, they get their hands on the boat and they bring it to the dock to launch. And then 5 minutes after they put their hands on, they launch. And then we're warming up basically. And then 40 to 50 minutes go by, and then we actually race.
And then the plan, the race itself.
Then the race itself is, we rowers, the coxswains have taught me to break it down into four parts, where it's like the calm, the hold, the fight, the unload, which is we like acronym that to CHFU. And it's essentially where, like, the first 500 meters is, like, the calm, and then from the 500 to 1,000, it's the hold, et cetera. And essentially, the calm is supposed to be, like, very, like, not relaxed, but, like, you're loose and, like, you're in control. And then the hold is, like, continuing, like, the pressure with that. And then the fight is, like, you're continuing, like, yeah, you're tired, but you're continuing to, like, put the pressure on. And then the unload is when you usually, like, pick up the rate a little bit. So for my race, it was, our calm was supposed to be focusing on, like, staying long and loose and, like, controlled. And then the hold was, like, keeping the press, because my rowers, I knew that they would lose the press as we continued on. So I was like, okay, we're going to focus specifically on the press. And then when we were transitioning from the hold into the fight, we took 10 strokes just focusing on press, and then 2 strokes to shift into the fight, and then 10 more strokes to focus on the press so that we could continue keeping the pressure on into the fight. And then it was a lot of just, like, staying very sharp and connected, because while you get tired, your technique typically deteriorates. So it was a lot of me calling, like, technicality, like, oh, like, make sure you're, like, sitting up and not, like, slouching. And then when we made it into the unload, I was like, okay, now we're going to be, like, really aggressive and sharp with our strokes and just, like, try to really, like, take it out. And then when it came to the last 250 meters, that's when we picked up the rate to go faster. And then eventually at the 100-meter mark, when we just had 100 meters left, we took out, like, the layback, which is, like, when you lay back and take your stroke. So we cut that out so they could sprint faster, and then they sprinted the rest of the way.
And with the four, you're lying down in the boat. I mean, what is that like?
It's interesting, because in a normal four, you usually have a foot plate to put your feet on.
Yeah.
Our four didn't have that.
Oh, okay.
So I was, the first race on Saturday, I was sliding down into the boat, and it was really bad. Like I would just have to hold on and, like, hope that I wouldn't slide all the way to the bottom. But eventually we put in, like, a buoy, like a ball, basically.
Yeah.
We stuffed the ball into the boat, and then we put, like, a yoga mat into the top, so then I could actually stand. So it was a lot better. I like laying down in it because I'm not really rocking as much, and also I can see because I'm at the front of the boat.
Yeah.
And that's a lot more helpful. But sometimes I get splashed a lot, and that's always really hard because I'm wearing glasses.
Oh, right.
And then I'll just get sprayed, and I'm like, wow, I can't see anymore.
It
was particularly bad one day at practice because it was icy. So I was just getting sprayed, and then my coat was just covered in ice, and my hair was covered in ice because it just kept getting wet.
Interesting. And then, I mean, the Malden River and Lake Quinsigamond, two different courses this past weekend. What were those places like? I mean, were there big differences or pretty similar?
There were big differences.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
The Tufts River was really narrow, so there wasn't a lot of space. It was kind of nasty also as well. And I know this because, like, I was looking at the water. I was like, wow, this is really nasty.
Yeah.
It was also really, really windy. That's something I noticed as well. So we were having a lot of, like, battling with the wind when we were racing. It was also a lot bigger of a practice space so that I could actually, like, go around in a circle a lot easier and, like, do more strokes when they were warming up. It was also, and most notably, the race course was shaped like an S. It was a curve.
Right. So, yeah, there's turns.
Yes. So there was turns. That was the big thing. It was wind and it was turning. But the lake was a lot different because there was almost no wind and it was straight.
Yeah.
It was also completely buoyed. So I knew exactly where I needed to be versus the Tufts lane. It was just like there are buoys every sometimes and I have to, like, figure out where I need to be.
Make sure you stay in your lane.
Make sure I stay in my lane. Yes.
Yeah, with all the turns. I mean, do you enjoy that challenge of making those turns?
Yeah.
Or do you prefer the straight on?
I actually like the turns a lot better because when I was in the lake, I felt like I was turning a lot more in the straight, which was really interesting. But I did notice that when I'm turning, I don't really know exactly where the oars are on my left side. So I did, in fact, hit a buoy on Tufts, but nobody really reacted, so I didn't even know we hit a buoy, but That was something that happened.
Interesting. Were you the only one who realized?
Yeah. Well, actually, no. They had to tell me. They told me because they were sitting behind me. I was like, they're like, we hit a buoy. I was like, we did?
Oh,
like,
I see. Yeah.
I was like, oh, sorry.
But that's not a huge deal. It sounded like they were able to keep going.
Yeah.
But
had it been had anyone ejected, I probably would not have known.
Oh,
Which would have been bad.
Right. For sure, yeah. Well, any other thoughts you wanted to share on your first weekend, competing for the women's rowing team here?
I'm excited to keep the momentum going as we head into these next couple of races this week. I know we have one coming up that'll be here at Bates.
Right.
And the week after that, it'll be here at Bates again.
Yeah.
And then I think we have MIT in between that as well. But I'm very excited for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking at the rowing schedule coming up, we do have a home regatta this Sunday at 9 a.m. It'll be kind of College, Middlebury, Bowdoin will be here as well. A bunch of different races for the Bobcats right here in green at Jaquina Boathouse. And Riley, thank you so much for joining us on the Bobcats. Congrats on the undefeated start to your collegiate career there.
Thank you.
This Friday and Saturday, the Bates Track and Field Program hosts the Maine State Championship. For the men's team, it's the 125th edition of the meet, which dates back to the 19th century. Head coach Curtis Johnson gives us a full preview.
Yeah, we're so excited to be home and everything that comes with hosting a meet, it's definitely a lot. So super thanks and kudos to our facilities team and the maintenance squad. I mean, they help us go into the weekend feeling good and confident. Track is not a sport where you just set the scoreboard on and go. Like, there's a lot of moving pieces. So super thankful for our Bates staff and community to help us host a good meet, including student workers from different teams. But we are excited. We're ready to go.
Yeah, certainly. And then, I mean, in terms of, certain events that stand out to you, I mean, obviously every event matters. You want to win that title. But what are some things you're particularly excited maybe to see?
Honestly, some of the same things from the early parts of our season, which is where are our event squads averaging the highest, right? So instead of focusing on just the individuals, some of our highest event squad rankings, where you take your top four and average them, would be women's triple jump, women's hurdles, men's 1500, 800, 5K, the men's 200 and 400 group, their depth is really impressive. And our women's throws group is really strong, so dominant right now. Relays for this meet are always a good way to sharpen up before NESCACs. And overall, I can't help, I know I said it already, but the women's triple jump quartet, they're number one in the nation, yeah, right? So we're really looking to show our better togetherness at this meet. It's very team oriented, and some of the sprint showdowns are going to be cool, because even in Maine we have some of the best sprinters in NCAA nowadays. It's not just a conference thing. We have some nationally elite athletes. And then you think about our returning national qualifiers and the DMR athletes, Ross Tejeda, Miles Logan, Cal Porter, Nate Roberts, Evan Migdal, and his signature event, 400 hurdles. Getting into some of those outdoor-only events like javelin. Just so many highlights ahead of this weekend.
Yeah, certainly. And we have a new throwing setup. Tell us a little bit about that, because I believe this is going to be your first home meet outdoors with this new setup.
Yeah, it is. And so we've had some facility changes. We used to throw javelin right through the center grass field, which is now the turf field. So we've been able to kind of like adjust and conquer. We have a new javelin runway that is where our hammer area used to be. Having a track surface javelin runway means it's still just as fast. It's not faster as it usually was. Yeah, we're now on the other side, and overall our athletes have been training on it for a bit now, but this will be our first meet to see how it all flows for a competition. But we do host NESCACs next year, so we're excited to use this as a preview of like how logistically it all works, but we feel really good about it.
Yeah, certainly. And the hosting experience, I mean, what's the biggest thing you're focused on this week? Because I'm sure you have a million things going on, right?
Yeah, I mean, just the time. The nature track meets are long, so, we're always time conscious and making sure that we can perform at a high level before the weather changes. This is New England, so, there can always be shifts in the weather, the wind, right in the middle of competition. So if all holds up, just to be honest and fair, our biggest concern is going to be making sure that we are building confidence as a team ahead of the rest of the championship season. And also Just taking advantage of, you know, no bus rides this weekend. Mm-hmm. Right here, roll, get out of your dorm, go to Commons and show up. And so we would love to have as many people from our community come and support us. I'm hoping that there's a good show for that. We also have the softball team also has a match, so there's going to be some busyness over there. Mm-hmm. So just part of some of the cool things that happen at Bates. It's going to be a lot of people on top of each other. And, you know, when you think of alumni gym, you think of that same thing. So I'm excited for a busy weekend, something that says this is our house, and we're ready to go.
You mentioned the triple jumpers, because there's four of them, really, who are in the top 10 all time at Bates. Like 40% of the top triple jumpers ever are here right now. That's got to be really cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're always a squad that knows we can have standout student athletes in any event, but for us to have a whole era, like this is its own era, to have four of the best triple jumpers in Bates history training, competing, and building together. That's exactly what we mean when I say better together, something that we talk about a lot. But it is cool. You know, I think about that group, and none of them are graduating. I want to throw that out there.
Right.
So, you know, they're able to really build this season and next and continue to climb. And, you know, if they all don't have a great day, but they're all do their best, it's granted to still show up. They're close enough in competitiveness to where they can move and place from one meet to the other. And I think they're not worried about who's in front as much as just doing their best and being excited to see how they stack up against, you know, the conference and nation.
I'm curious, is there any internal competition? Who's going to get the 40-foot mark first?
Oh, my God. You know what? I have no single guess, and I genuinely don't. And I love that, because right now the top-ranked triple jumper on our team is freshman Alessandra Lindos, still adjusting to, you know, the newness of college and training and how to do a full season. And we also have Alana Ardrey, who's right behind her now, a junior who kind of she knows the length of the season, what's that like, and, you know, how to stay hot when it matters. So the talent, the youth, the experience, we have a mix of it all. But the 40-foot barrier is a huge talking point. It's just one of those barriers that, you know, every event has one. So I know they're looking at it and thinking about it, but no matter what, they're in a competitive state together.
And then in the javelin, we had a first year set the Bates modern record in the first meet he ever threw the javelin for Bates, George Klatsky. It's a hard event, though, right? You don't want him to throw it too much. Tell me about the balance there, because how physically tasking is that?
Yes, it is so demanding, and it's so funny. We were at Emory, and it was our first ever spring break meet. I said to Coach Kleena, we actually had conversation over dinner, maybe ice cream, like, man, if George throws a big one, he doesn't really need to really compete after that. And it's funny that he did. He didn't just throw a big one. He had a huge series. He really put the conference and nation on notice. And there's a lot of wear and tear in that event. It is not an event you do every weekend by any means. So having the time to train at a high level and think about throwing a javelin, you think about like what it does to the body, the shoulders, just being able to really give them time to rebuild from that high. You know all about the throws legacy we've had, and so to have a freshman really excite us, our alum, and you know, show that, hey, Bates is, you know, we're back in that capacity, it's really exciting.
You know, in terms of the competition coming in here, it's obviously Bowdoin and Colby, but other teams from the state also, right? I mean, how many people are we seeing here?
Yeah, we're going to see Husson. We're going to see St. Joe's, UMaine Farmington. We're going to see Augusta. We're going to see Thomas. And obviously, I think you might have said this, but USM, of course. And so even this indoor, I even had so many kudos for our neighboring Maine D3 schools. Even the schools that typically don't host these meets, they've had a splash at the national level and across the board. So one thing about track and field, even if you are a young program, you can have standouts that really set the bar and change, you know, the landscape. So I have so much respect for all the teams, even the newer teams joining us to compete at this meet and joining on the fun. It's looked different over the last few years, but in a way that we're really embracing. And I am a fan of a lot of the other programs, and I'm a nerd. So for track and field, I'll see athletes from Thomas and St. Joe's and be like, hey, I saw you last week. Congrats. So, you know, I always say there's no defense in track and field, so I have no problem when other athletes are performing well.
Great. What are your thoughts you want to share on the upcoming Maine State Championship we haven't got to talk about yet?
Yeah, we're home. You know what time it is. So we really want to have fun with this. We have had such a strong season so far and not much rain. So we've got great momentum. We really hope that our community can come out over to Russell, support us, whether it's partially or the full meet. Any support matters. We can't wait to see everybody out there.
Yeah, at least on the men's side, it's an event that's been happening since the 19th century. So a lot of history there. Coach, thanks so much.
Yes, thank you so much.
On Tuesday, the Bates baseball team bounced back from a rough weekend against Colby to defeat St. Joseph's 14-2. The Bobcats host Tufts in a big three-game series this weekend, starting Friday at 3 p.m. It's a busy home week as the softball team hosts a pair of doubleheaders against Hamilton and Wesleyan, respectively, this Saturday and Sunday. Find the complete Bates athletic schedule online at gobatesbobcats.com, and we'll catch you next time on the Bates Bobcast.